Hello and welcome from sunny San Francisco. This is Wizards of the Cast, episode 36. In a room filled with planeswalkers, we've got Evan Wardell.
How you doing?
And a very special Arthur Edmund. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Very good. I am very happy. I am Cole Ferriolo, and I'm not buried under 11 feet of snow. And I'm very happy about it. Arthur, you grew up in the Midwest, right?
It was awful.
Did you get a Facebook flood of, like, well, had to bury my car out for the 17th time today to go to work.
The best is when we always get that, like, that warm snap in February out here. Yeah. And you just take a picture of outside.
Yeah.
And then you put it on your family's Facebook, and they're just like, you know, blizzard.
Yeah. No, definitely. I was on my lunch break today, and I took a picture of myself next to a flower vendor so I could upload onto Facebook.
Yep, the weather trolls are real when the weather gets bad on the East Coast, and it's been great to kind of not to rub it in.
Oh yeah,
I say it's a choice.
The sister island to the island me and Cole grew up on is called Nantucket, and it apparently lost all power and cell phone service due to snow the other day.
Yeah,
and
I mean the swells were huge, huge. Some of the buoys were clocking in like 30-foot swells.
Jeez,
which is big.
That's real big.
Coast. Yeah, it was huge. Anyway,
grateful for the sun.
Grateful for the sun.
It's still cold out here, though. Like,
that's true.
We it's not time to brag and troll quite yet.
Yeah, no, I mean, I couldn't go down a full t-shirt. I had a light sweatshirt on. I mean, I had it unzipped because I didn't want to overheat. But
you didn't want to sweat.
Yeah, I don't want to sweat.
The heat's actually out in my apartment building right now, and it's looking like we have to replace the whole thing. It's like $20,000 to do so.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to take like a week.
Jeez.
Yeah, my tenants are not happy.
I'm sure they're not. That's the other thing. Californians also panic when it's like the nearest hint of actual climate, you know, like weather, like actual stuff might be happening.
Dips below 50.
Dips below 50, rains a little harder than usual. Like,
Man.
What did Steinbeck said? He said, the West Coast people know climate and the East Coasters know weather.
Oh.
Which I think is always a good description.
It's a better quote than that other one we hear all the time.
The writer guy. You know.
The Twain?
Yeah, that guy.
The Twain
guy.
That was a pretty good quote, though.
Cold this winter was a summer.
Yeah,
in San
I guess just, you know, living here, you hear it so often.
It's yep.
True.
And living anywhere else, you hear, well, it's a choice. And that must suck.
I mean, his, you know, Twain's blog, like, I don't really know who this guy is, but
Twain's
his blog must be, like, really popular, because that was a pretty catchy thing to say.
That's true.
Yeah.
He's huge on Instagram.
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
But we're here to talk about magic.
That was great weather talk.
It's good. I'm glad we kept it local and talked about the weather.
And made fun of East Coasters.
Yeah.
Anyways, if you're still listening, we've got GP San Jose out here on the West Coast. And all week we've been prepping. It's team sealed with Fate Reforged. Me and Evan were at Gamescape on Friday. We got in a team sealed there with some of the local gang, as I like to call them.
With our actual full team for once.
It was great. I have been super busy with production stuff, so I haven't been able to play a lot of Magic. I haven't, even as Arthur was telling earlier, been able to get a full draft in, which I've been really bummed. But it's all going to change, because this weekend I'm going to draft till I drop, and then I'll cube, and then I'll throw up.
Aren't you
going to
drop first and then draft, because it is a team sealed
thing? Will be a lot of dropping and drafting.
You're going to draft when you drop. Till you drop.
Anyways, I'm looking really forward to it this weekend. And what have we been seeing? I mean, Arthur, you've been doing some team sealed practice. I know, Evan, you've gotten a little bit more than me.
Exactly
the whole
one.
Team. So
no, I've gotten two more than you. Okay.
You've gotten two more than me. So what is there any, you know, I played a pretty decent Jeskai deck that was blue-white on Friday, and I did pretty well with it. It was a pretty decent deck. Are there anything that we're seeing in Fate Reforged that we can kind of say are trends that we're noticing? I feel like blue's better than it's been before.
So it's still really early on in Fate Reforged. I still don't have all of my sort of like evaluations of all the cards like fleshed out and very nuanced right now. I've been like looking at all the Fairforge cards on like a strictly sort of power level. Mm-hmm. And then there's some like obvious synergies with like 1/1 counters and like prowess, you know.
Yeah.
If it says prowess on it, it is its own synergy box. But one sort of general thing I've noticed since Team Sealed, and I'm not sure if this is true of Sealed as well, is equal parts Cons and Fate Reforged.
Yeah, it's 6 and 6.
Yeah, it's six. Yeah, 6 and 6 packs of each when you're doing Team Sealed. And because I know in the draft, it's the pack one is Fate Reforged, and then you do two Cons packs. And so I figured the Sealed format would mimic that, so it would still be a heavy Cons field with a little bit of Fate Reforged cards mixed in, but that's not the case. Yeah, which has led to this really interesting. There's a situation where there's just a lot less morphs. Like your games end up not being all like both of you playing morphs on turn three and then doing the morph dance back and forth for
that
like
is
three
something
turns.
I've noticed is that you can't always guarantee that your opponent is just going to always be able to play a morph.
Yeah,
at the very bottom, like I feel like in Cons, at the very least, your opponent would tap three mana and play morph if they didn't have anything better to do.
Yeah.
You don't see that as much now.
Yeah, I mean, there's still enough morphs running around that, you know, it's a lot of decks will have a lot of them, but there's plenty of decks that just don't really. I mean, like the Jeskai deck you played had two morphs.
I had two Efreet Weapon Masters, and I think York had two Ponyback Brigades, and you had two Woolly Loxodon, and that was like the bulk of the morphs.
I had
like
more of the morphs because I was kind
of...
Yeah,
you were the more green, you had a lot more morphs. But yeah, I had like two, maybe three.
Yeah,
a third somewhere.
But yeah, it definitely it was interesting. I'm not really sure what it means for the format as a whole so far, but it's something that I've noticed that I've been like,
it's something that you can say
on.
Is indicative of the Sealed format, definitely. It definitely feels like there's a little bit less more morph. Anything else, Arthur, that you've been doing some?
I mean, I would just like to say that I totally underestimated Manifest. I thought when I first saw it, I kind of felt about it the same way that I feel about Inspired,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
where it's just kind of a lazy design.
Yeah,
and that's what that was my gut reaction to it when I first saw it. But holy cow, it's really fun.
Yeah, it really like fucks with you too. Like if when it's across the table from you,
I traded off one of my Villainous Wealth with a X2. It was really weird. I was bummed, but it was also kind of hilarious, you know?
Yeah.
I've killed more lands than I would like to admit.
Well, the guessing game that you put yourself that you get into there, it's actually really interesting. I think it was designed very well. And if you can trade off the stupid land that you don't want, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It is far more complex than I think any of us realized, and it definitely is a huge factor in the format. It's really kind of... I don't know how that's going to be in draft because I think you'll see less of it. But certainly in limited, because like I was running two reality shifts. I was running a reality shift, and then I was running a second reality shift that I was 90% of the time boarding in, and probably should have just ran the two reality shifts.
That's the
one in a blue, exile a creature, they manifest a card off the top of the library. So like it was great because like especially in Seal, a lot of bombs going around, and I found myself very much siding in the next one because especially I was playing the white. Blue Jeskai deck, which is mostly flying creatures. So if you can just like ground a flyer, even if it's not that good, that often can like just seal out the game for you.
Yeah, or just downgrade the big guy who's going to try to
big stupid thing
win the race against you.
Yeah. So I saw a lot of Manifest, and like I said, I killed a lot of lands that I'd like to forget, and it was really good. The guessing game is really complex that you're playing. Very interesting.
Here's the other thing that I noticed. We did the Team Sealed last weekend at Eudaimonia. This was with my full proper team, you know, because a lot of times you have to do subs and stuff when you know, somebody's busy. Not all three people can make it on a weeknight. but what I noticed is I had a pretty solid deck. I believe I was going Abzan that night, and I was getting beat by bombs.
Yeah.
I didn't have any bombs. My two rares were Crux of Fate and the new figure of Destiny, Warden of the Destiny or whatever it's called.
Warden of the First Tree Green figure of Destiny.
Exactly. Which is a decent card, but it's not exactly a bomb. It's not exactly the Dimir Dragon that just owns you and can't do anything about it.
It's a bomb once you pump 12 mana into it.
So I was losing to bombs a lot. I was also having a really bad mana day. Like, variance was just, it was that day where I'm just going to mulligan. And this was the worst, because Shang used to be on my team. But we traded Shang for Ryan Cuban, which is a strict upgrade, in my opinion.
Some blowtorches here.
Oh, he listens to the show.
Yeah, that's. I'm talking to you, Shang. Listen very closely. You're inappropriate. Anyways.
Ouch.
So his team, we get paired up against him in round one. Yeah. So this is like...
Okay, so you go mano a mano head-to-head.
This is... And we're in the same seat. So it's like, it's on, right?
Was he wearing glasses?
No, of course he wasn't.
Inside jokes.
We can talk about it. We can lay this out for the whole ether to hear about.
All right. Let's keep it in the game.
Okay, so it's Meituan and Ryan versus Zhang, Shang, and Andrew Hudson. And we all draw our opening hands. Everybody on my team mulligans.
Nice.
And then Tuan mulligans again.
Nice.
I don't remember the outcome of both of their matches, but it was up to me at some point. So I think Tuan lost and Ryan won. Or the other way around. I don't actually remember. But we...
Came down to your match.
It didn't come down to it.
Okay.
Or maybe it did. It doesn't matter for the point of the story. Right. Anyways, we did go to game three and it was close.
Okay, that's what matters.
But he was playing something.
Yeah.
He was playing Shang.deck, whatever that is. And I lost in game three. I feel like it could have been close, but he did overpower me with bombs, like all of my other opponents. I didn't win a match that day. It was very frustrating. And, you know, I was consoling in my teammates, and I was like, you know, listen, like, let's not be results oriented here. Mm-hmm. We all mulligan twice. You know, just trying to breathe some morale into my group. And Shang interrupts, of course, and he says, well, you know, it's really easy to blame your losses on mulligans. Just straight faced, just like Shang, you are Shang.
Thanks for that pro tip.
You will always be Shang, and you're Shang. That was my story about last weekend. So it was a frustrating weekend. We went 2-2 on the day.
Yeah.
I did notice that I thought my deck going into the tournament was great. I was pumped about it. Mm-hmm. I got bomb.decked on every round.
Yeah, I got a lot of the same feeling. I mean, the bombs in my deck were Crux of Fate and Doomblast. I like sort of the control-y deck, and then like the actual creatures I was going to win with were like Woolly Loxodons, which are like they're huge. They're not quite bombs, but they're real hard to deal with. And the matches, every game felt like if I got Crux of Fate or Doomblast and cast it, I won, and if I didn't, I lost. Like.
It's a very interesting card, too, especially if you don't have dragons in your deck.
Yeah.
And your opponent does.
Oh.
So what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, so that was interesting. But, you know, those being my quote-unquote bombs or rares, you know, they're not bombs that win you the game. They're bombs that help you control the game.
Yeah.
And I got dragoned all over my face. Like, there was this dragon everywhere.
Let's see. I played Alex. So we did two rounds. We had enough people to do two rounds. And then I played Alex just for a third game of fun. And I believe that in that fun match, in one of those games of three, he unflipped his blue-black dragon from a manifest. It was terrible. Or he Obzon Charm blew me out.
Silumgar.
It's pretty good.
My deck even went as far as to, in one game, kill his stupid green dragon twice, live through a wrath, and deal with a second dragon.
Jeez.
And I eked that out, but, you know, I'm not going to win the match. Like, my deck's not going to match up to all that, those shenanigans.
I felt very similar that it was a bomb format. I had two mythic rares in my deck. Not cards that I would say are the game kind of stealers. I had Soulforge Grandmaster.
Soulfire
Grandmaster and Clever Impersonator. But I was also playing that blue-white deck that is just like play a flyer, clone my flyer. Just start swinging like eight in the air.
Yeah, and then you do like a Crippling Chill and a...
Yeah, you do like a Pressure Point.
Singing Bell Strike or whatever.
I did get the wombo combo of playing using Activating Soulfire, Grandmaster, and getting back both Reality Shift some turns, and then also getting back What's the one that deals gets +1/+0 and you draw a card for one white?
Oh, Defiant Strike. Defiant Strike. That was super sweet.
It was super sweet to get back Defiant. Like, I had another, like, prowess guy on the board, so I was like, attack, and then just Defiant Strike. Like, you would know it was coming. You'd be like, well, can't block. Okay, Defiant Strike, and draw a card to get it back into my head. So I got some fun things like that, but it was mostly, like, I just had a bunch of the 2/3 prowess flyers, like an Alabaster Kirin, and the 2/2 that could bounce a guy for 5 or become a 3/3 flyer. And he was, like, living in my deck with my clever impersonator, so I was just getting, like, you know, successive 2/2 flyers and bouncing your morph guy back to your hand.
Which was interesting, because I felt like your deck performed fairly well, and it was, like, the least bomby. Like, it had the least powerful of the powerful cards we had available to us. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's good. Maybe
I also drew hot, and I think those Jeskai decks, if you don't get a strong draw, like, you need to aggressively mulligan it. Because if your draw comes out kind of wonky, like, you can just be dead in the water for 3 or 4 turns. Like, if you just don't have a critical mass of creatures and spells to, like, niche in there. I do think it's gotten a lot better with Pressure Point, with, like, Reality Shift, with all these other, like, utility cards. So now it can just be, like, this kind of very median good stuff deck in blue. Yeah. I feel like blue
it's a little more resilient than it was before.
I think
it doesn't fall apart as quickly. We both said fall as part.
Yeah.
I kind of really like that untap draw card.
Yeah, we had 3 of them in our pool, and I had, like, so many. Like, I had also Jeskai Charm.
That's a white card, right?
There's 2 of them. There's a white one. I think it's tap.
Tap.
One of them's tap. One of them's untap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Refocus and
Pressure Point. Pressure Point's white. Tap. Refocus is the untap. Refocus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Refocus. I like refocus. I love. It cards seemed like pretty that. Good. Do you guys remember the heroic enabling
Triton Tactics?
That card.
Yeah.
So my cube. Love that card. Love that card.
I want that playmat. Yeah. I love that card. Yeah, the blowouts. The salt is real.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah, I felt the one weird part about Refocus to me is it seems like a Jeskai card because it says draw a card on it. I don't know. It could be totally misguided. And also the art's sort of like Jeskai-ish. But it's like more often you'd want to tap an opposing creature and draw a card than untap one of your creatures and draw a card. Because usually you want to push through the damage. So the untap ability just seemed like a bit like weirdly misplaced to me. I mean, I love the card. It just feels like when you're trying to like fit in your best, you know, whatever 7 instant or sorceries in your Jeskai deck, like more often I felt like the pressure point would win out over the refocus.
That's like what it was in my deck building.
I like refocus and teamer.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think that's where you
probably I want to untap a Woolly Loxodon and
you just want to untap big guys.
Shred something to bits.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
There's still a lot to learn about kind of the cards and their interactions in the format, but there's a whole other side of Team Sealed too, which is like your interpersonal play as well. Like, for instance, Defiant Strike is a card that classically has not made any of my Jeskai decks. Like, I just really undervalue it, and certainly when I saw something like Pressure Point or Refocus, like, I'd much rather play a card that does something along those lines and draws me a card, even if it costs an extra mana. But Defiant Strike ended up like doing some great things in my Jeskai deck. Like, I ended up being a crucial point of damage to win one of my matches, and also like with all the prowess triggers I could get off of it too. And also, like, it had that awesome wombo combo moment where I was paying 5 mana and getting it back and drawing a card. And that was a card that you and York had put in my deck, and that I was really hemming and hawing of trying to cut. But after playing with you guys in Portland, I was like, you know what? I'm going to like listen to you guys on this card because it fits in nicely in the meta, and it totally ended up working. And that's one of the things is interesting in this format is that you have to build a deck with your friends kind of and with your partners, and there gets to be this 23rd evaluation of what your playable should be. Like, I think the thing...
Yeah, like the last three cards in every deck, everyone has like... Are the 3 that you tend to disagree with, you know, the 3 that you're most likely to disagree with your teammates with. So it'd be interesting to hear, Arthur, what have your, like, deck building experiences been like with your team so far?
I think that the opportunity to play in a team sealed event like this and pick, you know, the two people that you want to play with the most and work together with them, I think that that's a really fun thing to do. It's one of my favorite formats, definitely, in the world of Magic. And, you know, my approach is to, obviously, you want to have your opinion heard, but I think it's also really important to respect the people around you and, you know, concede to people if you think they're better than you. You know, to tell people they're wrong if you, you know, really think they're, if you're thinking that your friends are wrong and you're bickering and arguing with them, you might want to, you know, trade them off for somebody else that you can, you can work with a little bit better. But, you know, my team is, Tuan Fan and, Ryan Cuban. And Ryan Cuban is definitely a better Magic player than me.
Yeah, Tuan Ryan's is great.
I am the worst player on my team, I would say, by a long shot. And so I try to kind of shore up the support role.
Yeah.
I try to, you know, have an opinion and only fight for stuff if I really, really want it. But I kind of, you know, depend on them to, you know, we are basically together putting the person that has the most say in which decks we put together and build out of our pool is going to be Ryan.
Yeah.
And the great thing about that is he'll listen to us. So it's perfect because he knows that we're trusting him to make the ultimate decisions, but he's also like, you know, it's not a big like ego fest where you're like arguing and bickering with one another. So that's kind of how, you know, we're going about it, and it's been working very well. You know, you definitely want to start out by looking at all of your lands.
Yeah,
you know, because that is, if something's close, if it's, you know, in between these two decks and it's close, well, if one's got amazing fixing and the other one's got terrible fixing, there's your answer right there.
Yeah. So like one of the things, like I'm really bad at, even like a regular just single person sealed pool, it, I'm bad at organizing it and figuring out what deck I should make out of that. I kind of have to use this method where I just kind of throw everything in and then just chip away like little by little until I start to get a sense of what it needs to look like, and then I can kind of refine from there. And even then, once I get like, okay, this seems pretty good, I'll still like maybe swap a color out and swap another color in just to like make sure. So I have this really haphazard way of building decks. And when you have to make three decks, it gets really, really difficult, because it's really hard to just say, I mean, what we try to do, obviously, is we sit down and we go like, all right, Cole, you make this deck, York, you make this deck, and I'm going to make this deck. Although we don't, but you still have to first figure out which three decks you're going to make, you know? It's like hard to even, like that first, I feel like that first step is really an interesting, like, an interesting step from like a deck building standpoint, like, how are we going to look at all, this entire pool of cards and then start to dissect it to start to get it into these three decks that we want to make?
One of the best things I ever saw that talked about this was, I think I watched a video of Marshall Sutcliffe building a sealed pool. And he did this process that I've kind of like started to adopt, which is this grid where you sort out kind of like by color. So you have like five colors, and then it goes three deep. Right, so it's 3x5, and the three deep is the cards in that color that really want you to play that color that you're like really excited about, your bombs, and then your middle is like the C's to B's that you'll be happy to play like in your deck, and then it's like, you know, low C's, F's, and D's, basically the unplayables. And so what it does is a really great visual way of just kind of like sorting quickly through and seeing what your strongest colors are, and then kind of build in there. It's different in Team Sealed.
It's also different.
The pool is much bigger too.
Yeah, it's also different in real life as opposed to Magic Online, because Magic Online you can do that sorting process really quickly.
This is a video
quickly
of him in real life sorting it all out.
Interesting.
And this is how he gridded it out, and I was like, oh, that's some real tech right there.
Yeah.
And in my cube, when I build my sealed decks in cube, that's the grid technique that I use now, and that's like really helped me in like just quickly building cube decks and sealed with just like a massive chunk of cards.
Yeah, and even though that I said that, you know, I do kind of feel that this format is very, the bombs are very important.
Yeah.
I think it also will, you know, be serviceable to you to lay out your non-rares and, you know, if just pretend, you know, you don't have any rares in this pool, now you need to build decks,
yeah,
you know. you know, what would you do, you know, with that portion of your pool? Because you do really want the nuts and bolts of your deck to be good. You want all of your draws to be good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you don't want to be playing bombs just because they're bombs and then the rest of your deck is trash, because that's going to lose very easily.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a powerful, consistent strategy is, I mean, even in sealed, like, a lot of the times way better than, you know, relying on a couple bombs.
Yeah, and I think I always tend to try and build the consistent, most consistent decks in sealed, which tend to be on the more aggressive side, which has kind of burned me in the past too, because in like an M15, it actually kind of worked out because I was kind of an aggressive set. But like in this set, certainly in like pre-releases and things like that, where I've had to build sealed pools and err on the aggressive side, which is tendably a slower format, it's kind of been tough for me. Although this Jeskai deck was a nice little different iteration of it.
You know what deck I really want?
Yeah.
I really want to play 15 Alpine Grizzlies and 8 Savage Punches.
All day.
That's all I want to do.
I'm game. Let's do it.
It's like
do you have a team for the weekend?
Oh, well, if it's the Alpine Grizzly Savage Punch team, if we can make that happen.
Sign me up. I love that card.
Yeah. It feels great.
It's great.
Yeah, yeah.
The card is great. So let me ask you this. So you guys have you two, and you have Yorick on your team. So who's A, who's B, who's C?
Yorick's... No. Yeah.
Yorick's C?
Cole's B.
I'm B.
That's all
I'm
I know.
In the middle. I'm sandwiched.
Cole's in the middle.
Yeah.
Yorick is in...
Either A or C, and then I'm in A or C. Okay. I think I'm C. I think Yorick's A. I think I'm C. I don't think like
I'm
A
glad
and
you
C
guys
is...
have this planned out.
Yeah, look, we don't... We haven't...
All I know is
there any
same
strategy behind your seating?
Nope.
Okay.
Not really.
Moving on.
I mean, no. I'm not entirely sure. Like, I would definitely say that I'm probably not the best player of us three, but I think it's fairly close. I could definitely say that I would defer a lot to Yorick.
Yorick definitely has the most experience.
I think he's got
Magic.
The most experience, and it definitely he's a judge, which is kind of why I wanted him to sit in the middle this time around, but I'm fine with sitting in the middle, too.
Yeah. I think if we could redo it, I think we'd both rather have Yorick in the middle, just because he's more likely to catch obvious mistakes. And me and Cole are both... neither of us like to jump out of our games, like, mentally. You know, we kind of have to stay there present with it. Like, every time a teammate has asked me for an opinion... and this has happened a couple times when I've been playing with Yorick over the past couple of weeks when we've been practicing, where he'd ask me about an opinion on an attack. I'm like, why don't you just do that? And he does that, and then like half his board dies. It's just like a bad attack. And he's like, why did you tell me to do that? I'm like, I don't know. I'm fucking playing a game here, man. I can't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's actually a very good thing to bring up, though. Like, this is going to test people on a new level.
Yeah.
People are not normally used to cooperative play, and there's a whole host of things that you can talk about there. You can talk about how easily it's going to be to qualify for slow play before you even know it.
That's true.
You're going to be able to qualify for if your opponent calls you on it, you know, just because you're talking, that doesn't mean you're playing. Mm-hmm. If you're having a conversation and your turn ends up taking, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, you know, if that happens to me, I'm definitely calling a judge after the second time it happens.
Yeah.
And you should expect that to happen to you if you know, it's going to be very easy to allow that to happen without even realizing it. So that's, I think, one thing that people need to take into consideration as they're practicing and prepping for this thing. And I think that there is a strategy that goes along with the seeding. You can talk about strategy on like what types of decks you're going to think to see for trends in A, B, and C. And then you can also talk about the configuration of between you and your friends and how you guys get along and how you interact, who's the worst person on the team, who's the best person on the team, who's going to need the most help, who's going to be able to snap in and out of their board state and be able to analyze a completely different board state and be able to actually give you a good answer on a question.
So here's the question. Who's sitting on your team?
I'm in the middle.
You're in the middle.
Because I need to be babysat.
Interesting. Because my...
And it takes two to babysat this big boy.
Yeah. I would...
It's a heavy baby.
I thought maybe you would put sometimes your best player in the middle. because that way he could analyze both board states that are happening.
That's how we started.
Yeah.
But Tuan doesn't really... Tuan's only problem is lack of experience with this format.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And we've been kind of running him through the ringer.
Yeah.
And we've pretty much brought him up to speed. Now, I'm not saying that he didn't used to draft this set before, but I think, you know, he could probably count on one hand the amount of times he drafted cons before we asked him to be on our team.
Gotcha.
So I think that he's, like, come a long way in the last 2 weeks. Mm. And I don't think he does, as far as mechanics and stuff like that, Tuan doesn't need any help.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and I was kind of the same way. I wasn't really doing limited much at all until recently, you know, in preparation for this GP. Yeah. I've been basically in constructed land. So, you know, even Ryan mentioned the other night, he's like, yeah, you definitely needed to brush up. You needed to
limited
to catch
up. Limited's a different kind of play style.
Especially this format.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, definitely. This format's complex.
How do you develop a board in this format when there's morphs? When do you trade off?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't have that figured out. I'm not saying I have it completely figured out now, but it's okay to trade off a morph when it's a really good creature for a crappy creature, and that's what I didn't want to do, and now I understand that it's okay to do that. But getting back to the talk of sequencing how you seat everybody, you know, if I can tell that Ryan's really in the tank on something, I can look over at Tuan and ask him for a hand if, you know, maybe he's sideboarding or something that. Ryan and Tuan aren't going to need, Ryan especially. Yeah. Ryan's our best player when it comes to experience with the set, and he just, you know, he drafts every week all the time. He doesn't need a hand.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how we're doing it.
Last time I played with Ryan, he drafted my cube and crushed face with it. It's really sweet.
Ryan is a good Magic player.
Oh, he's very good. Anyways, so definitely there's that of getting in. Sorry, what were you going to say, Evan, on player?
Oh, I was going to say, I think what you were saying, Arthur, made a lot of sense to me. Not particularly talking about player experience or like how good a player is, but really like how it's more like, I feel like it's more about your personality as a player than your actual experience as a player. Like if you are the type of person who likes to ask for help and likes to, you know, sort of talk to your teammates like you maybe should be in the middle or something, you know, and if you're the type of person who doesn't, you know, just wants to like focus and just like stay in their own world, then like being on the end is definitely definitely better. But it's, I feel like the consideration is more often the sort of the type of interaction you expect to you would like to have with your teammates, and not so much like, I mean, unless there's a huge disparity between like the experience level of the players on the team, I feel like most of the time you kind of just want to be where it's gonna be comfortable, I guess, if that makes any sense.
Comfortable how?
Because like I noticed with you when I was playing when we were playing against your team, like you were very quick to ask for assistance from your teammates, like, what do you think about this hand, what do you think about this play, and like, I know even though I'm not the best player in the world, it's harder for me to, even if I ask for, you know, help from one of my teammates and they give me, they say like, oh, you should take this line. It's kind of harder for me to understand like why that line is necessarily like I feel like I have a good intuitive idea of the lines of play I should take. I feel like the hardest decisions in Magic are ones that have to do with hidden information, especially in the set with morphs, and those questions are harder for your teammates to weigh in on.
That's you also need to, that brings up a good point, you kind of want to ask for help sparingly, because there's a tax, there's a hidden tax, and I'm probably going to go to Ryan first for help, number two, because Tuan doesn't want to be bothered, he wants to play his game,
gets in zone.
Right, so, but, and I see it when I ask Ryan for help, there's a tax associated with it. He's got to pay the tax man by coming out of his game, coming out of his train of thought, you know, and he's got to refocus on what stupid question I'm throwing at him, and he's got to, like, give me an answer, and if I have another question, you know. So that is going to put a burden on your teammates, So
definitely,
and try to use it sparingly.
Yeah, one thing I noticed on Friday that I actually really liked that our team was performing, and I think this was because it was a little bit of a casual environment, but at the same time, I think we all benefited from it, is that we all kind of stayed in our games very much. You know, I would lean over and ask York about mulligans, and he would ask me about mulligans, and you were kind of very much in your own world, Evan, and sometimes I would come in with you and just, like, watch a game and try and, like, ascertain in between my games that were going on. But it was very much, I also feel like I'm one of those players who can, when I need to play my best, I need to focus on my game to some extent.
Yeah.
And I feel like all three of us are kind of like that. And so it just gets down to really big questions. And also, in the natural flow of matches, some games will wrap up earlier than others, and that's when you can really invest in your teammate into one of their matches.
Yeah, if you can, like, stop and look, like, see a game from the beginning, or at least see a game from, like, you know, turn three or four on, mm-hmm. and, like, ask really quick, all right, like, what's your opponent been doing the last two games? Like, what's happening here? Then you can have a better feel for the game that they're in, and then, you know, not only do you as the teammate who's observing the game have a better idea of what's happening, your teammate who's playing the game has a sense that you're there behind them, seeing everything that they're doing, seeing everything that their opponent is doing. You and your teammate have all the exact same information in that game, and you can kind of rely on them a little mm-hmm. more. And, like, when someone makes a suggestion on a play, you can see the understanding of the nuances of that game from that person a little more.
That's the other thing. When you ask for help, context is the most important thing you can ask, that you can be providing to your partner. It's not so much like, what do I do here? It's, what do I do here if he's got X, Y, or Z, and I've seen Z in game two. So, you know, those ways of prepping your partner so that if they are coming in halfway through, that they know what the parameters of the question are, and it's not an open-ended, do I attack here or not? You know, it's, do I attack here or not into this, with taking that, these are the life total, you know what I'm saying? You can really help your partner out. Otherwise, games just wrap up early, because sometimes somebody's playing the aggro deck and somebody's playing the control deck, which is the last thing I want to touch on with Team Sealed, is what really interests me is not so much where your players are sitting and the skill level of their players, because especially with our team, we're all kind of to degrees on the same level, I would say. It's what type of decks go where. So does aggro decks go in the middle? This is something I noticed at GP Portland, was that the blue-red tempo aggro deck was often sitting in the middle with a control deck on the side or things like that. Anything that we've been kind of – we played kind of two aggro decks and one control deck.
This is a very interesting topic, and one that's been discussed quite a bit in between me and my two teammates. And I can tell you that going into this conversation, I had an idea of what I thought was absolutely correct, and I was wrong. if you played at
Story of my life.
If you played at the last Team Sealed in San Jose in 2012, October 21st, you would have found that pretty much every time you faced somebody in Seat C that they were playing Rakdos. Okay. You would also probably find that they were the weakest player on the team. Mm-hmm. And that was just a trend.
I'm Seat C.
Yeah. So you would
I'm going to play Rakdos and suck.
I think what you would see interchangeably in between A and B, you're going to see Azorius slash Selesnya slash something else.
Yeah.
And then always Rakdos in C.
Okay.
And it's going to be, you know, my son, he's learning how to play Magic.
It's the simple deck, right? Know? It's the deck that's just turn them all sideways.
That trend is not true for this format.
Yeah, okay.
We have ideas about what we think is the best configuration, but I don't think that you're going to see. Typically, you're going to see that aggro deck in Seat C. Most of the time, I've seen, like, a lot of soul tie over there.
Mm-hmm.
But it is important to, if you suspect you know what the trend is going to be, you know, that is valuable information that you can use to try and. You know, you want to hit your good matchups. You want to give each of your decks the best matchups that you can give them, you know?
Yeah, totally.
You don't want to have a super slow deck get ran over by aggro. Mm-hmm. But I think that the... I don't think you're going to see a lot of aggro decks in C. I think most of the time they're going to be in A or B.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you... Has your team been going under the idea of wanting to put certain decks on certain seats or wanting to put certain decks with certain players?
Both.
Yeah, I think that's what the answer always comes down to is just kind of what ultimately you will see a variation of different deck types in all the seats, and you will be playing at least one aggro or one control deck in in whatever seat you're sitting in the matchup. And so I think it's always safer to go with what are you strongest playing. Do you know this format's control deck? Are you familiar with what that deck looks like? Or do you know what the deck's, this format's aggro deck looks like? Like, I played the Blue-White Skies deck before in this format, so I knew kind of how to build a decent version of it, and we had some of the, I knew how to identify some of the tools with it, and I kind of know how to play it. You just, like, try and curve out with flying creatures and have a few spells.
And I think that that's a very important point. I think that you want to put the deck that the person's most comfortable with in their hands. Like, if, Jacob Wilson was on your team, mm-hmm. Young guy from this area, plays Delver all the time. If you build a tempo deck in this format and he's on your team sealed team, I want that deck in his hands. Yeah. He knows how to play tempo.
Yeah.
And I think that that's very important. So we've kind of got a loose structure of how we're going to do things. I would say a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are probably from the area, so I'm not going to reveal what those are. But we definitely have a somewhat of a template.
We
kind of know what we want in each person's hands. And, we put a lot of time and discussion into that. Not a super lot, but we did discuss it thoroughly.
That discussion really helps. And if you're prepping with your team and maybe you don't have a lot of time, or you do have a lot of time, or you're driving down there with your team this weekend, I would definitely recommend a little discussion. And it's just honesty is the best thing in it. Both with your skill level, what decks you're comfortable with, your familiarity with the format, that'll all go a long way to helping you and your play and your performance with your team.
And on that note,
so I got to ask, they're going to let you play green black, right?
I hope not.
We did last time.
I did. Oh, God damn it! Look, it just keeps being open. The only green black deck
we accept you for who you are.
I like tempo decks.
We appreciate the person you were born as.
You know my favorite thing about green black decks is playing Rakshasa's Secret on turn 3 and Hooting Mandrels on turn 4. That's a tempo play. I like tempo decks.
There's also that Death Dealer guy who looks pretty sweet.
Yeah, but he's like rare.
Death Dealer, there's all sorts of stuff. I mean, I could also, I feel like I've got a little handle on green black too, so I can take my wheel at it. It's just, my concern is sitting in B, facing a lot of aggro decks, and just like,
you know what's going to be there,
but
man?
But I don't really know what's going to be there, so.
I feel like, I don't know, the seating thing to me is just, it's so weird. It's such like an unknown quantity that I don't even want to think about it.
Clearly, you just want to care about your game, your pool.
Yeah, I just wish we could go back to 12 packs of Return to Ravnica and then build 3 decks out of that format. And
that
go
must
to
have
that.
Been nuts.
I mean, I was so terrible in 2012 when it came to Magic. But that format, man, I would love to go back to it.
Yeah, it's fun.
My deck was really, all the decks were broken, but my Rakdos deck was insane. I lost a match that day.
Oh, baby.
It was great.
My memory of that time is foggy.
Well, I'll be bringing the Rakdos, the Rakdos featuring and Ravnica inspired cube down, and definitely want to get some cube drafts in. So
look me up.
Be on the lookout.
We'll have to do it.
I'll wrangle us up, and we'll get one in.
Oh, I want to talk about one other technique.
Sure.
And this is not necessarily exclusive to team sealed play. This is just Magic play in general. This is my new quote unquote try hard thing. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that phrase, Eric Camposano.
Try hard thing?
Yeah, this is my try hard thing.
What's your try hard thing?
Magic try hard. Just trying real hard.
Okay, trying
real hard. What I do, especially for removal spells, you always have, especially on your opponent's turn, you have time where you're not doing anything. You're just kind of analyzing
watching.
And observing what they're doing, mm-hmm. Maybe you're trying to get a read on whether or not they're happy with what's in their hand, etc., mm-hmm. etc. I've been writing down the removal spells on my score sheet.
Oh, that's smart.
I've also actually been writing down every card in their deck.
That
as I see it.
That is a lot.
I think
it doesn't take It doesn't take away from anything else. There's enough time to do it. And I'm going to start doing that more. Yeah. This is not like a super profound thing that I'm explaining here, but it's helped so greatly because you can have a known quantity of what their removal spells, and people usually just remember that stuff. My memory, let me tell you, it's so bad.
Yeah.
And if I just have a handy little list there, they've got this, this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, especially if it's an uncommon, because, you know, or a rare removal spell, you don't really want to be playing around that kind of stuff until you see it.
Yeah.
You know, so just having that running list, especially if it goes to three games, it's very valuable.
Well, there's a lot you can keep track of, too, with morphs in this format.
You can almost write down an entire person's deck by the time you get to game three.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And especially if your game's going long and you're going to game three and your teammates are going to come over and, like, take a look at your game and give you, you know, input, having your opponent's deck list is really valuable.
It's pretty great. And I've actually taken, you know, I'm separate. Have two lists. I have their creatures and their spells. Like,
Yeah.
I've been playing around with it a little bit, and I like it quite a bit. I don't do it all the time because sometimes I'm lazy and I just want to play casual Magic.
Yeah.
But I will definitely be doing that at the GP.
That's a technique that a lot of pros do to varying extents.
Sure.
From writing down everything in your graveyard to, you know, not doing it.
You're just like, oh, you're playing Zoltai.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's. Keeping that focus, keeping that attention.
He has at least six forests.
Keeping it cool. Drinking water. That's, I think, my last big recommendation. A lot of water.
That's a really good one to point out. You know, the difference between a hydrated person and a dehydrated person, you're just so much more calm.
Yeah, and also...
Bring snacks.
Magic is a lot of brain power. Heats up. Anyways... speaking of Magic,
wow,
transition fail.
So we have been having a lot of fun talking about the new Fate Reforged, the format. We should move on to our segment Crack, Sack, and Bury, where we talk about other cards in the Crack, Sack, and Bury, where we choose three cards on a theme. One we want to crack, we want to open it and put it on our deck, and we'll be really excited. One we want to sack, we'll play it, but we'll sacrifice it if we have to. And one we want to bury, if it gets destroyed, we won't regenerate it.
We're doing Fate Reforged cards.
Fate Reforged cards. So since we don't have a lot of experience with the cards as of yet, we're going to keep doing fun, splashy ones. Oh no, we're doing an uncommon cycle, right?
That's fun and splashy.
All right. I mean, it's fun.
It's
splashy in the sense that it involves multiple colors.
All right.
So we're going to be doing three cards from the uncommon cycle of monocolored cards that have additional stuff they get if you control permanents of an off color.
Static abilities,
if you will. Abilities. There you go.
Is that correct? I'm no judge.
No, that's correct.
I think
correct.
Stuff you get is the,
that's the technical
term. Yeah.
Okay.
So the first card we're doing is... Battle Brawler, which is a 2/2 for one and a black. All right, sorry, I was looking at a computer behind my head. It was terrible. Battle Brawler
it was
is
actually hilarious.
2/2.
Give me that back.
That was a one and a black moment. That was like the puppet turns around, does the double take.
Blank. For the. This is a visual gag that our listeners can't. So he's a bear. He's a black bear, one and a black. As long as you control a red or white permanent, Battle Brawler gets +1/+0 and has first strike. So he's a Mardu guy. If you got that stuff, you got a badass on your hands. The second card is Hungering Yeti, which is 4 and a red for a 4/4. As long as you control a green or blue permanent, you may cast Hungering Yeti as though it had flash. And finally, we have Abzan Khingard. Abzan Khingard is a 3 and a green for a 3/3. He has lifelink as long as you control a white or black permanent. Bam. Who wants to go first? I'm looking at you, Cole.
Okay. Good. Then I get to take the easy one. I am cracking Battle Brawler. That card seems insane. This card was actually a card that's very highly considering for Cube. Black tends to be the control color in my cube, and this is clearly a beat-your-face-in bloody pulp card. So it kind of went against some of the design grain that I'm working with, and it's also not a zombie, so it loses that battle. But it was really close because the power level of this card is absolutely insane. A 3-2 first strike for 2 mana is insane. And I might be best case scenarioing it. Remember that your lands are colorless, so they won't count as colored permanents.
Wait.
What?
What?
I guess I cheated.
Yeah. That's a common misconception. So you'll need like another thing out. And with Morph, you tend also, and with Manifest, to have less colored permanents on the battlefield sometimes. But god darn, if you just have a white or a red creature out, this thing just beats house. Like, it, 2 drops that I can tack past Morph in this format are gold. I mean, they really are the best 2 drops.
2 drops that have power of 2 in this format are very important.
Yeah, definitely. But if they can...
If it's got first strike, it just, like, eats
first strike, so if it can prowess trigger into a 3-3, if it can ferocious trigger into a 3-3, I mean, those are some of the first pick cards from cons, where these 2 drops that could, you know, trigger and attack in.
I see what you're saying.
So, anyways, that's great. I don't think I have to say anything more. It's a warrior. Wait a minute. It's also a warrior, so it's also double down awesome. Okay, then I'm going to go... I think that this gets kind of close between the red and the green one. I think I'm going to sack the Yeti. And this isn't something I thought I would say because the Yeti's 5 mana and it's a 4-4, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it seems kind of expensive. It seems like a big setup card, you know, the gotcha, flash it in. But I'm kind of also thinking that at 5 mana, you could either unflip a morph or flash this in. And, you know... You can keep that mana untapped at the end of your turn. You know, go to your opponent's turn, then have the ability to either unflip a morph or flash this guy in. And things that can have that flexibility that fit into your morph plan tend to be pretty good. And so that's where I'm going to put it. The green one, lifelink is great. It's really great. But the 3-3 for 4 isn't totally inspiring. And that's my big knock against it, is that, like, sure, you go this guy in turn 4, and then your opponent unflips a morph that's usually bigger than this. So it just feels like it doesn't scale very nicely in the game. Whereas, at least with the red one, I get a little beef.
Yeah, I see. Beef. You like beef.
Give me the Yeti beef. I'm all about that Yeti beef.
So I think I'm gonna crack the Battle Brawler 2. That card is insane. If you play it on turn 2 and then untap and play any white or red permanent, you're in real good shape. The one knock against this card, and I think all these cards, is just the prevalence of morph and uncommon colorless creatures because of morph. But, you know, if you have this creature, this seems like a fairly early pick and something that you can kind of build around. It's going to be in the first pack, so, you know, you're going to have to get it fairly early in your pick order so you can, you know, build a deck around it if the colors are open. And just 3-2 first strike, it's just so good.
So good. That, like, kills so many things.
Beats down hard to kill. It's just going to be a your opponent's going to, it's going to take a few turns for your opponent to deal with it, assuming
that you're a very clever trick.
Yeah, and even then, you know, if your opponent is playing morphs, if they're on the morph plan, They're still behind. Yeah,
when you play this on turn 2.
Yeah, even on the if they're on the play, if you play this on 2, they untap, play a morph. You untap, play a red or white permanent. They're behind still.
Yeah.
I'm gonna sack the Khingard. I really like that. The card really fits into the strategy that I want to play it in.
Mm-hmm.
Having a solid 3-3 body to block morphs and stuff is really good. We've been talking about how morph is not as prevalent in this sealed environment, but I think in draft, it's you know, they're still going to be everywhere. And being able to block and gain life, help you get to the late game is you know, kind of exactly what you want to do with the green colors. Mm-hmm.
It's also a great bolster target.
Yeah, like, I mean, if
3-3 life looting just screams build Tron me.
That's true. If a 3-3 is the smallest creature on your battlefield, though, like, you're doing pretty good anyways.
Yeah, that's true.
And then I'm going to bury the Yeti only because he costs 5 mana. Mm-hmm. And 5 is when I want to be flipping stuff up. And as far as, like, places to put a lot of mana, there's plenty of places to put a lot of mana. He's just kind of
better than a 4/4.
Yeah, even a 4/4 with flash, it's a fine card, but it's just not. You know, I'd rather flip up a teamer charger. You know,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah,
I'd rather flip up. I don't know, like a Sagu Mauler.
Yeah, flipping up the Sagu Mauler is sweet.
Anyways,
I disagree with everything you guys just said.
Okay,
oh, shit.
Great.
No, I actually almost agree with everything that you said, and I'm really glad that you went sack with the green one, because otherwise it was going to be unanimous, and then I wouldn't have anything to say. The first thing that I'll bring up here is we got a little combo here. We picked Jund colors.
Oh, yeah.
That makes me really happy.
Jund life.
Best
wrong format, buddy.
Best three color. So I think Jund is definitely the best shard in Khans of Tarkir. I will force that whenever I can. Actually, just kidding.
You get all those great fixing?
Yeah. I actually played against Jund at Versus.
I actually think Jund would not be such a terrible...
He had every removal spell.
Yeah.
Every one of them.
Shocking.
I beat him, though. the Battle Brawler is surprising to zero people. That card is really good.
Yeah.
It's good before it gets the ability, and it's way better after. The fact that it's Warrior is almost... I mean, this card is a first pick.
Oh, yeah.
Easy. Mm-hmm. I think that
the King Guard's a Warrior, too.
Anytime this card is in a pack, I think that there's a very high percentage chance that it is the first pick.
Yeah.
the Yeti, I think it's better than you guys think it is.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. It is a 5-mana... instant speed removal spell. The 4/4 on it, I think, is very good. I like the card a lot. I think it's great in a teamer deck. You obviously don't want it in a Mardu deck. I think that the green one is unplayable. I don't want this in my deck at all.
I think
it is awful. 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 I do think that...
It gains you life.
You got to think about your life, Link, sometimes. that... was a Tyler Pugliese quote. I think that people underestimate lifelink a lot. A lot of people say that it's terrible. Well, it actually is. That's not always true. It's not a hard and fast rule. And I think that there is value to lifelink, but I think on a 4-mana, 3/3 in this format, I don't think there's a lot of value in this card. I did play it once when the format was like brand new. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to avoid putting it in my deck. Going forward, I'm not impressed.
It just feels like
it costs too much for a 3/3.
Yeah, at 4 mana,
it costs exactly as much for a 3/3.
Yeah, but you could have a 4/3 for 4 mana, like returns things. You can get all these morphs.
So many more things.
It is
at uncommon. Like there's just at uncommon in green, you can get a lot more beef.
If it was a 4/4,
yeah,
sign me up.
Yeah, if it was like unmorph Abzan Guide. Yeah, I'm down for that. And Abzan Guide has shown me that lifelink on a modicum of toughness and strength can be like quite good and game-changing. But this guy just doesn't... Like, I'd even like him just to be a 4/3.
You know, now that I'm thinking about it, I think in this format, a 3/3 for 4 is not as good as it normally is.
We can't allow you to take it back.
I'm not taking it back.
This is written into stone.
I'm not taking it back. In fact, I'm making it my crack. I think because of the nature of the multicolor format, creatures are just more powerful for their mana cost.
Yeah.
I mean, in most formats, a hill giant's fine. This is a hill giant with possible lifelink. I mean, it's pretty good.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
All right.
Come on, vanilla test, guys.
Yeah.
Get a two for two.
It's fine.
Get a...
I just think that the Yeti... I have a sneaking suspicion that the Yeti is better than you think it is.
It's possible. No.
I mean, feel like the way that the Yeti... You don't realize it, but the fact that, like...
I think if it has flash, it's really good.
You know, you're...
For sure.
How many times are you in that position where you're like, okay, you have two morphs on the battlefield, you can, like... There's just ways that you can invest your mana in this format.
But if you have two morphs on the battlefield, you don't have the colored mana or the color.
Well, you have like a morph and you get a color guy. You know what I'm saying? You got like small stuff. I don't know. Not being really hypothetical. But I just feel like there's a lot of crafty ways you can invest your mana and conceal your mana. And this guy kind of fits into that game plan, which happens with morph.
I think... I think if you were to put all these guys like sort of in the arena in a sort of mid to late game scenario, the Yeti's the best because he's the biggest.
Yeah.
And I think in the early developing game, the 2-2 they can get first strike is better. Mm-hmm. And Kingard, he's cool.
Kingard,
I like him.
I think he...
You just like your Yak Warriors.
I don't think he's amazing.
They should
I
start making tri-cards, right? Instead of we have split cards. They should make tri-cards. And they could make a Bant card out of the cycle. They could take the green one, the white one, and the blue one, put them all together, and just have one crappy card instead of three. Yeah.
I think I might just have a preference for green cards.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we do have Sultai, whatever the hell, that's a... 3-4 for 4 in green that when a creature you control dies, they're way better for sure.
So much better. Like, that's the thing, is like, there's just other uncommons in green that are just better than this card.
I think the only thing I don't like about the Yeti is there's just a lot going on in 5.
There's just a lot
going on.
It's a
Yeti, dude.
It's
look how awesome it is.
I agree that sometimes
read the flavor text, man.
Okay. No clan is adept at saying go away as the teamer.
Yeah. That Yeti needs... He's a mean guy. Anyways.
Well, there have been some interesting things. Scott, I'm just down with transitions.
You know what? I got it, buddy. Don't worry.
Okay. Act 3, go.
So, Crack Second Barrier was fun, right? Oh, that was fun.
Yeah.
Are you doing your part 2?
I don't have a segue. So there's a not a big announcement today. There's actually nothing from Wizards today. There is a cool article that went up on Wizards today. Mm-hmm. That was talking about the Beyond the Realms?
Uncharted Realms, which
Uncharted
is their
Realms.
Weekly Wednesday column that goes over. It's basically like a short story. Set in whatever the current magic
is. Yeah, it's the lore. They tell the story.
It's creative writing.
I used to read
them a lot religiously.
Yeah, the books were super awesome. I used to read those books all the time.
It's like a flavor of the book every week, you know.
Yeah, and there was a small little slight reference to one of the cons, I guess specifically, Alicia Keys, who apparently smiles at death, as a trans woman. And it was just, you know, a slight reference.
It was a focal point of her background story.
That's
it wasn't
true.
A slight reference.
Yeah. And it was kind of like an allegorical, but it was not proselytizing. It was sort of like, this is this person's story, this part of this person's struggle. And, you know, it's about the story of the person. It's not a, I mean.
It's her background story.
Yeah, it's just her background story. And
It's
her deal. And it generated a lot of discussion online today.
Which is always the worst.
That's because humans are terrible.
So, Arthur, it's been great having you on the show.
Goodbye.
Not letting you go. Because there was quite an outburst online on Facebook, where a medium you're particularly, social media that you're particularly active on, about this. Very issue, and I know you actually read the article, so maybe you want to like dive in on. You can play our expert for what kind of went on today, and it might be a good little wrap up.
I didn't study the article and read it super. Today was a crazy day for me. It was my last day at a job that I was leaving, so there was a lot of that going on, and then I got involved with this crap online and that wasted a couple of hours, but I did read the article. I would assume that there's a background story for all the cons.
Yeah,
I didn't read any of those. I read this one specifically because of what was going on. I am interpreting this like Wizards is doing the same thing that they're doing for the female player base. They're trying to work females into their story. They're trying to work transgender people into their story because they want the lore in their game to be welcoming to all people. Mm-hmm. And they, it's kind of a nod to that. It's kind of, they're taking a step in this direction saying, hey, we this is a game for you too, yep. And our community is welcoming to you too.
And it's interesting because the article is Alicia is a con. She's a character of power and of note, and so she has, you know, I think that's not necessarily was a surprise.
She is the con. She's not written in as the weak transgender person that's been.
She's
you
not
know,
a bit character.
No, she is the con and. You know, she does have a strong role, and I think that is great. You know, one of the lead designer from Dragon's Maze is also transgender. Mm-hmm, she's mm-hmm. still an employee of WotC. She's in a different role now. I think she's also a developer, a coder, and she works on Magic Online as far as coding the cards and stuff.
Tough
hopefully
gig.
Not coding the UI because that that would be rough.
Yeah.
But. You know, the interpretations of some people on the internets as far as, you know, why you would want to do this, why you would want to write, you know, this is obvious. No one's debating that this is not a social, political, you know, move.
Yeah.
Like, they did this intentionally.
Yeah, and they...
There was absolutely a meeting about...
Yeah.
How they were going to do this
internal
and
discussion.
Why they were going to do this. One of the more ridiculous things that I read today was somebody saying that they were doing this as a cash grab. The intention to do this was to get a bigger player base so they could take money from the transgender market as well. And some people are not bright.
Yeah.
And I get angry
a lot,
but, you know, I'm not going to go into that too much. All I'm going to say is I think that it is brilliant that Wizards is taking the stance on this kind of stuff that they are. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. It makes me so happy and proud of this game.
Yeah.
Not only is it the most, it's my favorite hobby by a mile. You know, all of my friends... Most of the friends that I hang out with are because of this game and through this game. And it makes me so proud that the company that pushes this game forward is they take the position on this type of social issue in the way in which they do. And they're willing to, you know, it's not super controversial, but it is a little bit controversial.
Well, certainly a bigger step. So the last thing, so like in Theros Block, there was a card, Guardians of Miletus. That mentions a homosexual couple between two men in the flavor text. And that didn't generate nearly as much kind of brouhaha.
Well, it was more vague.
It was veiled in the flavor text. It wasn't a legendary creature. It wasn't a hyped card.
It wasn't a great card.
You played it if you had to.
You play it and you have to. I have to admit, it is in the cube, partly because of the historical relevance of the card, and partly because you just play it if you have to. It's an 06 wall. It's all right.
Yeah, I can say...
You can always cast it on turn three.
from what little I read of the thread of discussion today, when I got to it, it was already like 129 comments deep, and I went to type something in the thing, and I was like, you know what? I can't. I'm not good at like organizing and expressing myself well in text. So I was like, I'm just going to stay out of this.
And I want to talk about that a little bit. You know, these types of conversations, they're not necessarily going to happen within your community in person, right?
Yeah.
You know, I guarantee you the person that I had a big beef with today, based upon the things that he was saying, I would never have that conversation with him in person. It just wouldn't happen. I don't know. We're not friends. Like, I know who he is. I've sat next to him at a tournament before, but I would never hang out with him.
I think more importantly, also, and one thing that you should keep in mind is the conversation also wouldn't have happened because of the reason I didn't comment. Just to like be clear about why I didn't comment is the nature of commenting in on forums online. It's hard to condense your thoughts and like translate your thoughts in a nuanced, appropriate way that like even this sentence that I'm saying right now, it's going to take a good 5 minutes for me to think it out, for me to type it out. And even then, it's just going to be like a moment that people won't even necessarily have, especially, you know, I was at work and stuff, so I can't like sit there and have this long conversation with people.
Unless you're me.
Yeah, but
it's your last day.
And people can take things out of context and things can get really incendiary, and it gets to a point where people start talking past each other, which there seemed to be a bit of that going on in that thread, too.
There was a lot of that going on, and I am a very stubborn person. I had a L2 judge directly email me telling me to stop. I'm making myself look like a fool, and I started arguing with him, too. Like, you know, because man. I get really fired up about this kind of stuff, and I take it very seriously. This part of our community is not a game. This is a very serious thing.
Yeah.
There, you know, we're talking about the type of scenario in this country where I believe the LGBTQ youth community has a double suicide rate compared to, you know, these are very serious issues and topics. And, you know, a lot of people are like, why are they doing this? How does this strengthen the game? Well, it strengthens our community.
Yeah, yeah.
It reaches out to people to let them know that, yes, we are a welcoming community, and that we should all be supportive of that. I was having a conversation with at dinner tonight with a friend who happens to be gay, and he didn't hear anything about this because he actually does work when he goes to work. But he was talking about how, he's like, you know, he's in his 30s, you know, and like, you know, he's got a, you know, I think that the gay people in San Francisco have it a little bit easier than other parts in the country. But transgender is there's a lot more work to be done.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot more work to be done everywhere, but it's harder. It's more difficult. And, you know, he even said, you know, if I was a kid and I saw wizards doing this, it would make me feel good.
Yeah.
It would make me feel less alone. And I think that that's a very important thing to do. And I think that, you know, I'm not going to go in on all the, like, trolling and flame wars and stuff that was going on today. But stand up for your community. Stand
up
for the people around you. And if somebody is saying something that doesn't make sense to you, challenge them. Maybe don't get as angry as I do, you know, and maybe keep it a little bit more civil. Than I got really mad. I was even by the time I got here, which was hours later, I was still just, I was bouncing around. I was anybody want to spar? Like, I'm ready to go. But it's ignorance. These people, what they're saying, it's not fully thought out.
Yeah,
I think it will not stand up to questioning. Mm-hmm. Asking questions is a very good thing. But if you see this kind of stuff in our community, push it out. Do your part. Feline Longmore is a transgender person. She plays Legacy a lot. Her trademark deck is the High Tide deck, and she's very good at it. She's very succinct. And she is probably the best High Tide player in the world. She won SCG Open Seattle a couple of years ago with the deck. And the awfulness.
Yeah.
The awfulness in the comments after she won that. Don't be that guy or girl or just don't be that person. It's bad. It's terrible. It kills people.
Yeah. I remember there was a bit of it was a more widespread. I know the sort of arguing that went on online today might have just been in our small little Facebook group that we're talking about, but there was a more widespread sort of just showing of ignorance of people when a transgendered woman was on coverage. I don't know if it was a Grand Prix or an SCG event or something, but there was a sort of a moment of taking stock of the Magic community a couple months ago when we kind of talked about this in episode number 15 entitled Gamer.
That's right.
I think it was 15. I don't remember. But we talked about this before. And I think a lot of this, because like I'm of the mind that I really want to understand why people end up believing the things they do or end up in this, because like, so there's one person on this thread today that was asking, like, saying something to the effect of, like, you know, this feels like shoehorned, like, why is this person have to
why
be transgender?
Why did they shoehorn a transgender person into the Mardu
yeah
con, you know,
yeah
doesn't make sense
yeah and it's like it's missing the point. And you know, I mean,
that's the issue that you're going to take. That's your line in the sand on this?
Yeah, exactly.
Really? Do you want to talk about some statistics about what's going on in our world when it comes to the...
Yeah, you know, I don't... Like, you don't even have to go that far. You can... Like, why not is good enough. Like, if you turn it around and say, you know, why is this con, you know, a straight... You know, a cisgendered male. No one's going to ask that. No one's going to be like, this cisgendered male, you know, straight cisgendered males is a black mechanic. It's not a, this doesn't belong in red. You know, the color pie is being violated or whatever. But it really is missing the point in a way that, like, it makes me, I feel like a lot of this isn't, like, ill-meaning. It's just, it comes from a place of lack of certainty about identity. Like, it gets into this whole sort of conversation about identity, the identity of, you know, Magic players, gamers, and that whole, you know, we all remember Gamergate of the past summer and all that crap.
I think that you can't pigeonhole any of the responses, pro or for, as any one type of thing. I think just as much as there is kind of people who are somewhat indifferent, I put myself a little bit in this category. I'm kind of a view of like, well, why not? Why not? Just like, what's the big deal? I mean, I think this makes this character a hell of a lot more interesting. And there's, you know...
people have problems with it because it is an intentional social, yes, political... Yeah.
There's the other side of it is that Wizards is taking a stand, and I think that's great when you look at that perspective of, yeah, Wizards is saying, look, we're a community of a myriad of different opinions and people, and our universe is going to reflect the variation of the real world universe and the universe of our players' base.
Yeah,
and that stand is great. There's also the stand of people just do not like the concept of a transgender person and do not want it invading their life. And so there is some of just...
And they think it's gross, and they think it's hate. Disgusting, and then there's also Christianity and all these other things, and it's all ignorance.
It's ignorance, it's anger, it's hate, it's confusion, it's also not knowing, you know, it's questioning of oneself's identity and the gamer community too. So I mean, I think it's a varied scope of opinions.
And I think on a less extreme level... there's, like you're saying, Arthur, there's the, since this is, you know, a very like intentional sort of like political statement, there's a sort of, a segment of Magic players, very cynical Magic players, who want to question everything Magic does, Wizards of the Coast does. I mean, like, you see this every time they like, you know,
maybe, make a change in anything, the sky is falling.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's this very cynical idea of, like, oh, they're trying to appeal to basically not me. And there's a really negative, like, lash out against this type of thing. And so a lot of people are sort of, like, primed to have like a negative opinion of a new thing that Wizards is doing, and then you add the whole identity crisis on top of
identity
that.
Identity politics.
The identity politics, and it just like, it turns into this really gross monster that's like...
And don't be that person.
Yeah.
That's what we say. Don't be
that. Couple of things about don't be that person. Speak up.
Yeah.
If you see it going on. Not everybody's the type of person that's going to speak up and get in people's faces or, you know, even try to, you know, get a dialogue going on this because you're just not that person. That's fine. But if you can, you should speak up.
Oh, yeah.
Don't let people trot out their crap because there are people online that are watching from the side that aren't typing anything. They're not saying anything. And, you know, furthermore, about the people that are always cynical and stuff like that, I am so happy that Wizards is basically saying our community is for everybody. It's for the LGBTQ community as well as everybody else. I am so happy that is something that they are communicating to us. And I'm also happy that now we can say, guess what? If you have a problem with that or you disagree with that, this isn't the community for you.
Yeah.
And there's the door.
Yeah, I think people should be backing this. I think that the silent majority is, this isn't an issue that you should be silent on always. I don't think that's always the best tack. Not that you maybe have to weigh in with brimstone and fire.
But you can.
But you can. And, you know, you should take, I think the best part of your message, Arthur, is that as a Magic player, you should take pride in this fact.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So maybe you aren't going out there and bashing somebody who disagrees with you, but you're going out there and saying, look, I too endorse this. And that chorus of people will far outweigh the naysayers, I think, if we all go out and do that.
And again, if you're making a naysayer in this situation feel uncomfortable, awesome.
Yeah. There's the door.
Well, I think
I told you guys when we were talking about this,
here's the
soapbox. Wasn't
going to
be too controversial, and I think I did a pretty good job.
No, you
know, I don't think you got to get too insane on the internet.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, the underground dojo keyboard, I forget. But speak up when you can.
Yeah,
I think it's important.
Think
support the people around you. You know, because you know, a lot of your community interactions in your local communities is going to happen online on Facebook and on different forums and whatnot. And you know, if someone sees you sticking up for them when maybe they haven't come out yet,
yeah,
and they're gay, you know. How are they going to feel when they can see that the people that they spend their time with got their back, even though the person that's got their back doesn't realize that they have? That's where you want to be.
That is where you want to be.
It's important, and I think it's also important that Wizards really does clarify this on the color pie. I mean, if transgendered women belong in red, where do transgendered men belong? Is this more of a black mechanic?
I don't know where you're going with this, but I guess let's keep going.
Let's talk about Ashiok.
You really
for a minute.
Want to talk about Ashiok, don't you?
Where does Ashiok think he is? He or she is. Anyways, that's been I think
Republicans belong in white.
No, well,
maybe Azorius.
I think
Azorius, all right.
No, I think Republicans are definitely Orzhov because they're like, you all can pay taxes to me, and I won't pay taxes. You know, they're like that extraction, you know, economy.
Red's the libertarian.
Definitely Ron Paul.
The Green Party, oh. We all knew they were a bunch of Johnnies. Or Timmies, I don't remember.
No, they're a bunch of Naders.
Bunch of Naders.
They live in the woods and smoke weed.
Yeah, Nader seems like a green card.
He ran for the Green Party.
I mean, that's not really a stretch, right?
Exactly. Okay.
Yeah, and Republicans hate them. They don't want green cards going around. I'm trying. I'm trying real hard.
I don't know. We're not going to get too much into it. Anyways, as a Magic player, be proud. We're all going to be tremendously supportive, and I can't wait for GP San Jose. It's going to be a lot of fun. Arthur, you're going to be down there. We're going to be down there. Everybody in SF is going to be down there.
Hopefully this is going to turn into one of those GPs, much like Portland, where it's just one big party.
It's going to get
This should be a celebration.
It's going to get nuts.
We're all going to be down there at the same time. Try to hang out with as many people that you can, you know, and let's all go out and drink if you want to and do all these things. It's going to be great. And cube.
I really want a cube.
And just be ridiculous.
It's
this
gonna
is going to be
fun.
A great weekend.
I'll drink because I want to, then I'll drink because I have to.
And with that.
And on that note.
And if you're down there and you want to drink with us too, you want to cube with us, you want to play with us, we're going to be all around the convention center. You can track us down. If you want to tweet at us, I'm at K Cole F, one word. Evan, how do we reach you?
If you want to tweet at me, I'm at nobody RLY.
Arthur, I believe you do have a Twitter account?
If you want to find me, just search for Top Wizard.
Awesome.
And whatever pops up first, just message me there.
Sweet. There you go.
We're also on various Facebook groups, so if you're listening and you are in the area and you know us on Facebook, shout us out. We would love to hang out with everybody over the weekend.
You can email us. We have an email address.
Yes.
wizardsofthecast@gmail.com.
We will be checking it before we go down there.
Where do we send complaints?
To
you
hell.
Can, you can send it to the... Oh, wow. It's the LGBTQ Alliance.
You can send it to Alicia, and she'll chop it in half.
There you go.
You don't.
I'm trying to. I can't think of a single like social advocacy group right now.
Well, let's cut that out.
Would have been
podcast.
A great joke. Well, for Wizards of the Cast, my name's Evan Wardell.
I'm Cole Ferriolo.
Arthur Edmund.
And thanks for listening.